Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 40, episode 2 of The Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
For July 17th, 2018, my name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Guess who's Jack? Jack again. O'Brien, tell a friend. That is courtesy of Herm Flappington at Balls and Hoops. And I am thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Just hit the studio of the TDZ on a mission trying to find Mr. Jacoby. Seen some dogs and her match, ain't no need to tweet. All Zeit gang know what's up with TDZ.
Mm-hmm. Thank you to Anna Claire Hodge for that. You know, I love Nate Dogg, rest in peace. So, and I also love Michael McDonald. So that was a brilliant marriage of the two.
It was.
Have you done that AK before?
Have I?
I feel like in the back at the end I sang.
Wow, calling me out.
I'm just
look, man. I'm just fucking recycling all of these.
Yeah, that's
you
fine.
Just
that's
never
fine.
Call me out.
I just
so,
no.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, man. We are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by one of the funniest stand-up comedians in the world. He is the host of the amazing podcast Never Not Funny. One of the first podcasts I started listening to, so I'm kind of freaking out that he's here in our studio. I can tell how intimidated I am by a guest by how awful I feel when I do my AKA, when I try and sing.
How nervous you get.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, this
like,
is,
this guy
this is stupid.
Shit.
I'm an idiot. Anyways, please welcome Mr. Jimmy Pardo.
Thank you for having me. I wanted to break into song and join you guys, but I wasn't. Maybe I should have got here at
Chicago. Anything by Chicago?
Well, I could do with my name involved.
Yeah.
Hang children play in the park. Oh, you know what I used to do here? Damn it. You brought up Michael McDonald. When I was in a band in high school, I used to do this. You don't know me, but I'm Jim Pardo. So I would do that.
Taking it to the
streets. Nobody's amusement.
I'm a huge Michael McDonald fan, so that's respect out here.
He's one of these guys that gets none, right? He gets ironic respect from people that want to look cool in Los Velas.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, the Yacht Rock era was pretty... I appreciate just sort of how unapologetically, like, sort of... laid back and not really experimental that era was for me.
Right.
Like,
but it was just singer-songwriter, you know, Miles. Yeah. You're a young man. I grew up with that music. I despise the phrase Yacht Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, it was just singer-songwriter stuff and people just doing their thing.
Right, right. I guess, that's the sort of rear view look at that music.
I get very, I don't... To me, Yacht Rock, is like a review you'd see on a cruise ship, and they'd wear ironic costumes and
do those
songs. Like, hey, we're going to do Bertie Higgins' song now. And then, I remember this. Isn't it stupid?
Yeah.
Whereas they're all great songs.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, you hear Brandy, 45,000 times, you're going to like it, or Baby Come Back by Player.
Mm-hmm.
I can do this all day.
Great song.
Well, she's a...
Fine girl.
I was going to say it. I was allowing you to say it.
I appreciate that. So we're going to get to know you a little bit.
Yes, how can I
better
help?
In a moment. But first, we like to tell our listeners what they are in store for. We are going to talk about all these white people calling the cops on people of color. We have a new record for just the most absurd example of that. There's a media bias chart that is out that I found very helpful, and I hope you will too. We'll share it with you in the footnotes. And describe it a little bit to you. We're going to talk additional reactions to the Putin-Trump meeting summit. We're going to talk about Maria Butina, the colluder and spy, an NRA associate. We're going to talk about why there's no real reason to think the P-tape isn't real. I think there, at some point during the news cycle, we started thinking of it as like a fun, absurd conspiracy theory. And it's like, no, this is entirely possible. This is kind of how they operate. We're going to talk. Economists from the UK have proven that sports bum us the fuck out.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about that. But first, we like to ask our guest, Jimmy, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
Oh, I don't. Well, I guess it's revealing about me as a father. The last thing that I Google searched was Dickie Goodman.
Okay.
You familiar with Dickie Goodman?
I'm about to become
familiar.
All right,
Google it and tell me what the first thing is that comes up on Dickie Goodman. And I'll tell you what my 10-year-old son Oliver and I were discussing the other day. When I Googled the name, because we wanted to see other songs by, well, I guess give it away a little bit.
He is a record producer who I'm seeing a YouTube song, Watergate.
Okay, Watergate was not as big. Mr. Jaws was his big hit.
Mr. Jaws.
Do you remember that piece of trash?
No.
Oh, it's awful. It's Dickie Goodman pretending to be a reporter. I'm guessing this was fascinating because he started in the 50s and 60s, I think. And then, but in 75, he did Mr. Jaws, where it's him. I'm here at the Amityville. I'm on the beach, uh-huh. and I'm talking to a shark. And what do you think, Mr. Jaws? Please, mister, please. And then they would play drop-ins of songs, and that's the shark answering him.
Wow.
And it is what? 100% unlistenable. But when you're 10, you love it.
Right.
It's, hey, the shark is singing.
Mm-hmm.
My son did not, who's pretty, he's a pretty hip 10-year-old, thought it was... a lot of fun and great, whereas my wife and I wanted to throw every speaker in our house away after we listened to it 75,000 times. So I said, let's see if Dickie Goodman has another song. And Watergate's fine. There's another one I think called Mr. President, which might have been one of his first, which isn't bad.
Batman and His Grandmother
is
one of his songs.
Yeah, that thing's awful.
It's a lot of really sweaty premises for songs.
Exactly.
Mr. Jaws, so he's not like making up lyrics. He's using other... like snippets of songs.
He'll say to Mr. Jaws, Mr. Jaws, why did you grab my hand? Why don't you give a hand to a friend?
Oh,
like
wow.
He'll play or what lend a hand,
fuck?
I guess, if I got the lyrics right.
Yeah.
So he would drop that in, like that.
Uh-huh.
Like that. Or what are you thinking about, Captain Quince? What are you thinking about the shark taking you off? Staying alive, staying alive.
What?
Oh, wow. Like that sort
no.
of stuff. Yes.
Dickie.
I don't know. Right. Maybe he's a big fan of this show, and I've just ruined his day.
I bet not.
As a 10-year-old Dickie, I thought it was terrific.
Frankenstein meets the Beatles.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
What is something you think is overrated, Jimmy?
Something I think is overrated? Well, it's local.
Okay. That's fine.
In-N-Out hamburgers, I think are maybe the most overrated thing. I'm going to say it. In the history of food. What's your thing? You love them, huh, Miles?
No, I mean, look, I don't think they're overrated. And I've had this discussion.
What are we talking about overrated? The second you move here, it's like, oh, I just moved from Chicago. You got to have In-N-Out.
Oh, I'm not
How
like that.
How are you living
I'm
your
jaded.
Life without it?
I'm jaded. It's in my DNA. Like, In-N-Out's just the burger place that I
that's
go
it,
to.
That's it, right?
Yeah. And so that's where I understand when it opens up in Texas and people line up for it because it's like a thing from a faraway place where they've heard tell of this In-N-Out burger.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think, you know, we had to sort of get real on this show and kind of rank burgers that are available. And I think In-N-Out has its rightful place as probably the best drive-through burger you can get.
Oh, I think, if I may.
Okay, no, please, absolutely.
Your skull.
What's your favorite drive-through burger?
I'm not comfortable with you knowing.
Okay. I am a big fan, and that's fair.
You know, I think...
Hey, can you go in the other room really quick, Jimmy? And I try.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this. Honestly, if push came to shove, I think drive-through, I'd go McDonald's. I think.
Wow.
Really? I would prefer a Big Mac over...
The Big Mac is one of the great food inventions of all time.
Yes, you're in good company, too. I'm trying to think of another famous Big Mac fan. Donald Trump, yes.
Yeah, see?
Donald Trump eats the Big Mac without buns. So that
Wait, he does?
Yes.
He eats it like with a knife and fork?
Yeah, with a knife and fork with no buns.
No buns?
He's not a human being.
Another reason to hate him.
Yeah. Yes.
Because I know pizza, he just eats the toppings. He doesn't eat the bread. I don't like the bread. I just like the cheese.
He doesn't
and the
like
sauce
bread at all.
And the toppings.
Yeah.
But it's not, and that's not a glute thing, right?
No, he's like a kid. Like that's how I remember as a kid. I was like, man, the cheese and the pepperoni is the best part.
Right.
Why don't I just eat that shit?
Right.
And he's like out here being like, just scrape that off, and I'll just eat a congealed cheese meat mess.
Yeah, I will say okay. So here's my take on In-N-Out.
Okay.
As
mm-hmm.
You know, not growing up here, so mm-hmm. not having been mm-hmm. raised on it,
mm-hmm.
I will say the fries are bad. They're not good fries.
Top one
McDonald's,
worst fry I've ever had.
Like if you have the option between the two.
Oh yeah, I eat McDonald's fries every
McDonald's
day.
McDonald's fries are
every day
way better.
I do. I heard they cure baldness. I found out. I think it's only accelerating mine.
I think the In-N-Out burgers are decent. I think the only way that you can give them like a special place is that value wise, they're a really great value. They're not as good as Shake Shack burgers.
No,
Shake Shack burgers are
different.
Way better, but they're more
but
expensive.
That's a restaurant.
You walk in, that's an experience.
Yeah.
You know,
you play foosball.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But In-N-Out, I mean, yeah, again, also they salt the shit out of those patties though too. That's where a lot of people don't realize what they're responding to when
mm-hmm.
they eat it. It's just the fact that it's just so salty that you're like, oh man, this is good. And you're like, it's just a lot of salt.
It's salty patties with fresh
But at least it's fresh
otherwise.
Ingredients. I guess that's the hook for me is like, at least I know that it's fresh-ish.
Yeah.
More so than.
By the way, I used to go see Salty Patty dance back in the,
uh-huh.
in the 80s,
oh, yeah.
and she was dynamite. Like,
yeah.
What is something you think is underrated?
You know, this won't surprise you. You already brought him up. I think post-Terry Kath Chicago, uh-huh. The band Chicago, is underrated.
Everybody, that does not surprise me at all.
Well, I panicked when you guys said overrated. I thought about saying the band The Knack, because everybody just thinks they have one song, My Sharona.
Right.
But I thought, in my gut, people really like to crap on post, 1978 Chicago and and 80s and Chicago, or that era, when Peter Cetera took the, that was the face of the band. And those are great songs. They're great pop songs. They're great 80s songs. And it's not the same, social commentary that was happening in the 70s with that band, or the horn-laden songs, but they're still great songs.
And you are a Chicago devotee.
I am. They are my favorite band. I was lucky enough to be in the documentary that was out about them.
Oh, nice.
And I had the pleasure of being with them backstage at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when they got inducted.
Damn.
And which was just a highlight of my my dumb career, but to use that word. But to be back there, and Jimmy Panko, who is the trombone player, came up and he's like, "Jimmy, we're so glad you're here. We're so glad you could share today with us." Like, what the heck are you talking about?
Yeah, that's amazing.
What? I can't believe you haven't chased me out of the dressing room yet. What do you mean you're glad I'm here? Yeah, man. It was really, for being a kid, listening to him when my dad was listening to them, and then, them being my favorite band. So So I underrated post Terry Kath Chicago, Miles.
Boom.
Put it down.
What's a myth? What's something you know to be false that everybody else thinks is true?
You know what? I panicked and I asked my wife about this. What do I run my mouth about?
Uh-huh.
And I think the answer to that we settled on was guys being slobs. Comedians always like to say guys are slobs. They sit around, they pass gas, they throw things on the floor, they smell their shirt to see if it's clean. Fuck that.
Yeah.
I don't know a single guy that does that. As I look at two that I panicked, maybe you're not going to say it's you two.
Right.
But I don't. I don't know a single guy that walks over to his laundry bin and goes, "Oh, is this one clean enough to wear?"
Yeah, yeah.
No, you're human beings. You live your life.
Right.
So I think that myth, that can go away. That sitcom trope, that stand-up comedy trope, that, although maybe some guy in Nebraska does that. I don't know.
I mean, I know. I have definitely friends who fit the mold of scum dude.
Really?
Like, I have a friend. Oh. I'm not even going to name him.
This is more about who Miles spends his time with.
Well, look, I'm from the Valley, so I know some interesting characters. like, my one friend who I've known since preschool, God bless him, he is sort of exactly like that, where he'll just... I remember, like, in high school, he would go into his garage to see if there were, like, old clothes his dad wasn't wearing anymore to avoid doing laundry. What? And just be like, "Oh, I'm just going to wear this old flannel with rust all over it," or whatever. And I remember one point he was so bad at doing his laundry, all of his laundry was piling up on his bed, that he just stopped sleeping on his bed and just slept on the couch.
Okay. Well, that's hoarding.
And maybe, it could be. I'm like normalizing some like very darker behavior. I'm like, and that's just him. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I don't, I definitely don't like farting unless it's around Her Majesty, my girlfriend.
Right. Because she finds it entertaining.
She finds it horrifying. Or my grandmother, because she gets so upset about it. But it gets a good laugh.
Right.
But other than that, he's cringing for me.
I don't even like the word. I hate the word.
Oh, wow.
I hate the word. I hate the premise. I don't understand why it happens. I don't know why. I mean, I know children think it's funny.
Yeah. I'm a child, though.
My 2-year-old just started realizing. He starts saying, "I make a fart." And that's the greatest thing ever. But I agree. Like, in terms of as an adult to another adult, I'm disappointed in you, Miles.
Well, look, I'm not out here farting for laughs like in the office. You know, like, I've worked with people who thought that shit was funny who are like in their 30s. And I'm okay.
Yeah.
This is in the privacy of my home to have fun. But I guess that makes it no different.
No,
really.
That's the way. You got to get out of that relationship. I may be overstating it, but you got to get out.
I do agree, though, that, like, you know, if it's between men and women, that there's no real difference. Some people are very sloppy. Some people are, you know, neat freaks, and it doesn't really matter. Like, I don't think women are more likely to be, you know, neat freaks. Female bathrooms are a disaster.
They can easily be just as much as a dude's, but again, I just don't. They talk about, like, I remember somebody said this about I forget who it was. They were working on a movie with Jennifer Aniston. They go, "Oh, I love Jennifer Aniston. She's one of the guys. She'll sit around, smoke cigars, and fart." Like, I don't want to hang out with dudes that do that.
Right, that's true.
What, are we in prison? Why is this happening?
I mean, just blow cigar smoke in your face.
What the F are you talking about? You know?
Hey, fire up that Churchill. What's up? It's Aniston in the building. You're like, oh, fuck.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. I wanted Rachel from Friends.
Awful.
All right.
Close that up.
Close it. Shut it down.
Shut it down.
All right.
All right, now is where I literally just sit here and listen to you two talk.
No, well, no, we I mean that's what
you
have
you
to
guys
say.
Are. You know, you're. This is far heavier than any nonsense I do.
Okay,
I just full. I'm just full of rage and go. You know, fuck him.
Yeah. Okay,
and then you guys will talk articulately about it and intelligently.
Not always. Not always.
All right.
I might do some farts. You never know.
No, I do know your lady friend's not around. So
yeah, okay. Yeah, exactly. So you're
or
safe.
Grandmother.
You're safe.
Yeah. All right.
All right. So let's talk about the latest trend that is apparently not the latest trend.
No,
but
not,
something
definitely
that's
not
been
a trend.
Happening forever. But I think we reached a new level, at least as I'm aware of, in white people calling the police on people of color. We have a guy in a LA Fitness in Virginia who got screened in a pickup basketball game, fell to the ground like in dramatic World Cup player fashion, like he had just stepped on a mine, and then immediately walked to the front desk, said he was calling the police and did call the police, and then just waited patiently for the police to come, and then said, I got screened hard and I want you to do something.
So tell me
about
the
it.
Cops come and go, okay, sir, you're the one who was calling for us? He's
right.
Like, yes. And he'll say, the police officer say, okay, so what happened?
Yes.
And what do you think he said to the police officer?
He assaulted me, I think,
and
is
so
probably
what happened?
How he put it.
And then the, and then the guy's like, which one? He's like, well, this black guy.
Right.
And then what happened? He's like, bro, I just put a pick on him. You know what I mean?
Right.
And he ran into it because that is basketball.
Why would a human being call the cops on this?
No, it's staggering.
Wait, did he say like he threw an elbow and like broke my chest? I have Marfan syndrome. I have a weak chest wall, like putting me at risk. Like, how do we take this beyond like logically that it was anything more than you're in your feelings because you probably ran into the screen.
But wouldn't first step be maybe you complain to management? Hey,
right.
That guy's playing a little too rough on the court.
Right.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know what? I got to call the authorities
That's my question is, are they seeing these videos going viral and thinking that we're proud of like the white people who are calling the cops? They're like, see, we can apparently call the cops on this. This is
no, because
they're the heroes of
you don't
this
see
narrative.
Drudge being like brave man of Virginia,
right.
Jim ends the scourge of blindside
right.
picks. Like, you know, that's not what it is. It's just we live in an era now where people have access to video cameras on their cell phones. They can document things and spread that information much quicker because of social media, that it just be more apparent. I think it's
so this was happening all along.
I mean, there is no shortage of people from my dad as a child to me, even in my teen years, of having experiences with police that were unnecessary because people being at a park see you through a window and they're like, there's people of color at the park at night.
Right.
And then they pull up and they're like, what's going on? And you're like, we're playing basketball. And they're like, all right, well, someone called the cops and they thought you were doing something. And that's nothing new. So
right.
I think now it's just people are, for whatever, getting even more bold. So they're willing to be. I mean, because really what they're doing is they're treating, you know, the police as customer service for their waning white privilege.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're like, excuse me, I would like to, the only people that can sort this out is the police because you have the guns.
Right.
And you can put your foot down on this. And then most of the time when they come up, it's incident free, and other times it can be fucking fatal.
Right.
So to me, it's like, it's nothing new. We're just seeing it more and it's being documented more. And I think there could be maybe a slight uptick, but this is not a new experience for, you know, like getting pulled over because you're black. And maybe there's this new element of now, you know, we're seeing people just calling the police for any old reason. Like even in Canada now, I read a story about a black family getting the police called on them because they were at the pool. Or a Muslim family because they were wearing cotton at the pool. I'm still not sure what exactly their grievance was with that, aside from probably the kids. I think one of the kids may have had hijab on or something like that.
Right.
So it ain't nothing new.
Right.
What was the fallout here? What did the police do when they arrived?
The police showed up. The athlete who like screened him was asked to step outside of the gym, and the cop talked to them. And this is the photograph you see of it, where the cop is standing between them, and it's like a preschool, like, you know, rivalry where the teacher is just talking to them, telling them how you handle your feelings. And the guy who called the cops is standing on the other side of the cop with his arms crossed, like, haha, now I got you, man.
Yeah.
And everybody was just
like, this is bullshit.
Blown away. Yeah.
I mean, anyone who grows up playing pickup basketball, you know there's always, like, that friend who everything is a foul.
Right.
And you're like, oh, that's a foul. That's a foul. You
right.
reached in, that's a foul. Man, you blocked me. That's a foul because it's my ego that
yeah.
you fouled.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know what happened to this guy that he didn't get the constant foul calling shamed out of him by playing basketball enough.
As a 5'4" man, I would spend a lot of time on the bench at the pickoff basketball games. Should I have called the authorities?
Yes, that's something you I should have done. I have not been picked.
I haven't been picked. I think it's racism.
Yeah. They're like, these guys are all white, too. Yeah. Right. I don't know.
I don't know, officer. I just thought I should blow in a call
to an ancestry test. No, we should look deeper.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, I mean, at some point, I think obviously the conversation now is shifting towards what is the proper protocol for police officers to handle these kind of situations when they're unnecessarily brought in to intervene on behalf of people who are just have some kind of implicit bias. Because, like, you know, there are people who I remember there was a story about the group of black women playing golf and the owner of the country club called the police because they were playing too slow.
Yes. Right. Insanity.
You know what I mean? And that's when the police have to be like, I'm sorry, this is not a priority for us as police. Like, we're here to stop, like, real crime. And if I'm out here trying to mediate you because you don't like the speed at which these women are playing golf and something happens and I'm here, then we have problems. But I don't know if, like, because, you know, 911 can't be, I'm sorry, that's not heavy enough.
Right.
Right. That just because then you get into a slippery slope of like being
well, because then what if something does happen?
Like, exactly.
What if all of a sudden there's violence? And that 911 person said
right, and I think that's where maybe the police have to begin having to mediate these in a way that they're like, so let me tell you how I'm seeing this as law enforcement. You have no standing. You look like this feels like harassment to me,
right,
or whatever. And I don't know how they're going to begin.
There should be some like official form of harassment or something, like a fine at the very least to like when you waste the police's time.
Well, you know what? When my alarm goes off at my
house,
I'm sorry I interrupted you, but I was just adding to what you said. When my alarm accidentally goes off and they can't contact my wife or I, the cops show up and it's like, oh, nothing happened here. I get $150 fine.
Yeah. Right.
So that should happen here. If you're wasting time on the 14th green saying those ladies are too slow, let's go.
Yeah.
Pay a pill.
The other thing is, I mean, because there are laws about like calling 911 falsely or whatever, or like unnecessarily, but those are rarely enforced. I mean, I think the permit thing is because the alarm thing is because that they think they're responding to something much more serious.
They show up and
yeah. But I think that's where, you know, these police associations or, you know, community groups or whatever need to really figure out, or, you know, or just people just need to realize, you know, people of color are not a threat to you.
Right.
I'm sorry that we're out here trying to exist too, but I'm not at the pool being like, I'm gonna turn this place into all black. And then y'all gonna have to wear kufis and start celebrating Kwanzaa. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like that. So come on, just let us live.
Also, so next up we wanted to talk about this media bias chart. There's not too much other than like you guys should check it out. One of the things that has kind of been a recurring theme that I've been talking about is the fact that because people think there is a mainstream liberal bias, Fox News is like way more damaging than it would otherwise be, because basically they're so far right and so absent of fact that, you know, they're the only mainstream media outlet that is not sort of somewhere near the center. And this just kind of backs that up. Basically, the only equivalent on the left to where Fox News is on the right are these, you know, websites that as a, you know, progressive person, I had never heard of. Like, there are these websites, Forward Progressives, David Wolf, Bipartisan Report, Occupy Democrats, Palmer Report, Patrobotics. So they had to like really go looking for things
I
that are as far left.
The Occupy Democrats as like a Facebook group or like a Twitter thing,
a lot of
but not as a like source of reporting or whatever.
The Palmer Report though is, right? Don't friends send you guys stuff from the Palmer Report?
If they do, I don't know. And then I'm like, why are you emailing me? But no, I have not interacted with the Palmer Report. I mean, when I look on the spectrum, the closest to that sort of line of propaganda, like, is like Alternet or Daily Kos or whatever. Like, but I think that's because they also have a lot of opinion, and they're baked into their stories. But then you look at what all the things that get into the like propaganda or contains like, you know, intentionally misleading information. That's where you see Fox News, Breitbart, Newsmax, The Blaze, Info. I mean, we know InfoWars, but like, that's what we've heard more of these outlets on the right than we have than these like sort of extreme kids. And Patriotics or whatever, we looked at that website. It was like a blog. They haven't posted since like May.
Yeah.
So they were really digging. But most of the stuff that you would see, like MSNBC, Mother Jones, or CNN or something, they fall into the opinion with fair persuasion category.
Right. It's like all of the sites that are supposedly left-leaning are literally left-leaning. They're like, they all cluster around the sort of center left, whereas the sites on the right, Drudge and Fox News and, you know, all the sites that you hear about, The Blaze, Newsmax, Breitbart, they're all like in the far left, and like at the bottom there's a vertical axis that talks about like whether it's, you know, actually contains facts or not.
So is it Wall Street Journal that is probably the closest to the center?
So Wall Street Journal and National Review are basically the right-leaning equivalent of the New York Times, The Hill, Bloomberg, that's
Well, the Washington Times is even closer to center than National Review is.
Right.
You kind of look at the chart.
Right. Yeah. But I feel like the Washington Times is not that well known.
No.
Right.
No.
Like National
Review. Did
you guys
ever see, I mean, I never saw CNN as left-leaning, to be honest. I mean, MSNBC certainly. But CNN to me always just kind of seemed kind of centrist. I mean, until, you know, we started hearing that it was fake news, then all of a sudden it got pushed over to the left. And I still don't really see it that way. They still, you know, make the mistake of having certain pundits on that MSNBC is, you know, we're not even going to bother doing that.
I mean, CNN's basically in the center. Okay. They're a little bit to the left, but
they get more. Where it gets sort of shaky for CNN is just sort of saying they have more opinion,
right,
and fair persuasion is where they fall into it versus being like completely neutral, free of commentary, which is like AP, Reuters, and things like that.
Who, by the way, did a wonderful job yesterday, both the AP and Reuters. Those were the two reporters who asked the questions that kind of tripped the president up. But I think a good example of where this comes into, like where this becomes a problem is, I was just reading Nate Silver's sort of recap of the 2016 election, and he was talking about when Comey released that letter saying he was looking back into the Clinton things, and the New York Times and all these like centrist outlets made a huge deal about it. And I think it was for the same reason that Comey released it in the first place, is they were afraid that Fox News would, once Hillary Clinton had won, make a huge deal out of it. Mm-hmm. And so by having like this very influential outlet that is influencing, you know, the mainstream and like how the mainstream behaves, you are pushing everything to the right.
New York Times, I mean, skews liberal, but oftentimes dabbles in conservative nonsense.
Right.
Well, nonsense. Because that's a perfect word too. Like they don't just go, oh, here's an idea. It's like, conspiracy
then like,
theory
what
nonsense.
Are
like, what are you doing?
New York Times. All right,
yeah,
whatever.
Because they're reacting to that. Because they're, you know,
they're like,
they
hey, we had six Alan Dershowitz, Martha's Vineyard stories like in one weekend. Like,
yeah,
you don't need that.
I mean, but that poor guy.
That guy can't have a salad, guys.
I know.
Come on, let him have a salad with his buddies. They're shunning him over a Caesar.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back, and we wanted to continue to talk about the story that seems to be occupying most people's thoughts right now, most media outlets' thoughts, which is the Putin-Trump summit in Helsinki.
Guys, I got to be honest. I was on Amazon Prime all day yesterday. Did something happen with the president?
apparently it did. I didn't think it was a big deal, but so we talked about it yesterday. Just a couple of things. We had a person who's very far to the left on as our guest yesterday, and you know, he had some extremely spicy takes about, you know, why he didn't think any of this mattered. And you know, it was also 1 hour after the press conference, so we were still digesting it, and I don't know.
I mean, suffice to say, you know, Josh, who is part of Democratic Socialists of America, what their focus is on is about working people running the economy and society democratically to meet human needs. So foreign policy isn't the priority, I think, politically for DSA, because they're all about empowering working people. Now, I think what happened is yesterday, the people took this. You know, his take was, I think maybe he personally believes that it isn't a priority because working people and the middle class is basically more dying important. Here.
Right.
Yes. And I personally pushed back when he asked me if I thought it wasn't important, because I do think it's important, because right. any kind of fuckery or meddling from Russia is maintains the power structure in this country and keeps the GOP in power and this enabling to keep going on.
Right. And also, two things can be important at the same time.
Yes.
Right?
And even though he believed that, I do not. And I know some people were sort of disappointed and like, oh, well, why don't you push back? Look, he's there to have his opinions on that. I pushed right. back. But again, yes, I can make that clear that we obviously these two things are very important. And at the end of the day, like when you look at how just sort of like things like wage stagnation and, you know, lack of access to reliable healthcare is a huge problem for American citizens, that does have a very destabilizing effect on our population as well, because it creates more division and it allows the corporatocracy at the top to point the finger at other people and say it's not us hoarding all of the wealth. It's these other people that are taking your opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we still need the democracy to function. And Russia is kind of getting in the way of that. So let's talk about that. Personally, so it didn't change anything I believed heading into the press conference, because I believed Trump was incapable of saying anything wrong about Russia, because either his ego won't allow him to like admit that he got help in his electoral victory.
Yeah.
Or because they have some sort of compromising information on him, which we'll talk about in a second.
It's more ego than that, right? Even if they have something on him, it's all about him looking like he didn't win.
Right.
Right? And that's all he cares about, because, like you say, you know, you could worry about more than one thing at once. It's like every time this comes up, he just immediately, it's a witch hunt.
Right. Well,
but it's not about just you. The Russians attacked.
Yeah.
Right.
So why don't you, yes, if you had nothing to do with it, or if you did, it's still about the fact that it happened. So, as a president, let's worry about that.
Yeah, but right. he doesn't understand what it means to be president. And that's yeah, the, and that's the main problem. Thing, right. And that's why yesterday was so fucked up, is that he had the opportunity as the leader of the country to confront the person who is meddling in our democratic process.
Yeah. And it was significant, but I found it completely unsurprising. Like going into that, there was no doubt in my mind that he was not going to confront Putin.
No.
First of all, because he, you know, has a huge crush on Putin, but also because he just doesn't have it in him, I don't think, to be confrontational with them.
No, he can only be confrontational with women.
Right. Yeah, that really does seem to be the case. He gets pretty spicy when it's May or Merkel, but yeah, when it's Putin.
Yeah. It was one of those things we were talking about, sort of the black hole analogy of sort of like, you know, you don't have to, like when astronomers, you know, are trying to observe a black hole, you can't see it, but you can see its gravitational pull on things around it. And I think from the election, like when we first started even the build up to election day, we saw that there was like this weird Russia thing bubbling up that you're like, damn, like that kind of makes sense. Like that's crazy. And then now you're seeing like more and more the connections. And I for sure was like, yeah, this doesn't surprise me. But it is when you think about it. It was surreal, though, like when we actually fully watched the press conference and you're like, oh, wow. Like we're not even speculating at this
right.
point. We're looking with our eyes that this – he was just sort of looking at Putin like, yeah, man, whatever he says, yeah.
Right.
I agree with.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, hold on, what?
The AP and Reuters put it fully, you know, they made him choose. Do you believe the FBI or do you believe Putin?
Yeah.
And he chose Putin. So, I mean.
So how is he still there today? I know I'd say that as a rube, as a dumb
right.
comic, I say that. But it's like, shouldn't, I know that this has been the problem since he got in office, is the GOP not doing anything or not, you know, checks and balances on nothing. But why wasn't it like while he was on a plane yesterday flying home, didn't they go, let's get together in a little clubhouse. This
right.
has to stop now, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
we let it go on so long. We got one Supreme Court guy. Let's end this nightmare. And if we bring Pence in, they still have not, anyway, I'm running at the mouth again, more emotionally than articulately. But
no, but I agree.
Right?
I think that question occurred to everybody yesterday is like, well, clearly, this has to be it. Right?
Yeah,
clearly,
right.
people are going to be like, "Well, he's obvious. Like he just said that."
I believe the Kremlin and GRU over our own national security and intelligence apparatus.
Yeah,
that he just said that, and even Putin on wax is like, "Yeah, I wanted Trump to win over Clinton." Okay, so you helped him win
right.
because you wanted it, and then so. Yes, what can they do? There were some really cool, hot, you know, tweets from GOP Congress people yesterday, like, oh, it was a shame. It was a disgrace. I've never seen anything like this. I can't
but all
believe.
all the same people who
it's Jeff
have
Flake
been
again running his mouth.
Criticizing
and,
him. Yeah.
It'll do nothing.
McCain and Flake.
And it was right. the same thing when Charlottesville happened and the party became basically aligned with white nationalism and the beginning of like, this is a disgrace. I cannot believe that. Then the news cycle changes and then you don't have to really be on him anymore about that.
Yeah.
And this will probably happen with this too, which is what's the most frightening. And now you can really say, I mean, not to say that before you couldn't, but this party is so, I don't know, their enabling is now reaching dangerous proportions. Because what could they do? They could censure him, but that doesn't remove him from office. That's just going on record for history to say, we really disagree with you, Mr. President. That was bad.
Right.
Or you can have hearings and calling cabinet members and be like, yo, what the fuck's going on over there? What's going on in the executive branch? Or, I mean, if these Republicans are truly appalled and are saying this is disgraceful, they have the power to say, hi, we won't confirm your Supreme Court pick. Hi, we won't get through any more of your nominees or appointees that you need confirmed. Hi, we won't vote on another fucking bill that you want until you sort this out and you talk to Putin and you correct this. But right. they're not going to do that. So that leaves us in a position where you're like, oh, okay, so you're clearly either you don't want to do anything. And I think as long as you're, you know, and making the Koch brothers' dreams a reality, then they're willing to just stomach anything.
Now, isn't he having a press conference right now, even as we speak?
Is he?
Okay, so now breaking news as we're talking about this, but it's still meaningless. So he just had a press conference in which he says, a day after his much-criticized news conference with Russian President Vladimir Putin, President Trump attempted some damage control Tuesday, saying, quote, I accept, end quote, the findings of the U.S. intelligence community that Russia interfered in the 2016 presidential campaign. But he again repeated his claim that there was no collusion between his presidential campaign and Russia. So, look, the too little too late, my man.
Yes.
You were there in the building. You could have stuck your chest out. And don't just come home and be like, yeah, little bitch. You're like, what'd you say?
Right.
Nothing.
Yeah.
You ain't about shit. And you know, you did what you had to do because this man is clearly, he's like Debo in Friday and he has control over you.
Yeah. I think when 538 was talking about how when you poll people about like the positive assets of Trump's personality, they ask like smart and he does not score well. And, you know, all these different things, honest, does not score well, but powerful, he always scored well. And I think this is directly like weakening that impression of his brand that he's powerful because he went up there and just completely cowered in the face of Putin and, you know, just said, yeah, whatever he says. Ask him. He has some great ideas. By the way, the great idea that he was talking about in the press conference was that Mueller would go to Russia and speak to,
to Putin.
And interrogate the people who they were indicting with Putin there, and then also he would get to interrogate
Americans
who he once killed.
It's a great. So. I think it's a very nice offer. Remember, he kept on saying that. It's a very nice offer.
Right.
Very fair.
Very fair. What are you talking about? It's a nice offer.
Yeah.
I don't know, and that's why. Yes, it's starting to look like that sort of worst case scenario where we're like, oh, maybe this dude is really he really is under control of Putin, has much more weight to it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Breitbart's top three headlines are all different pieces of a single statement by Rand Paul. President did a good thing by meeting with Putin, shouldn't turn it into a partisan issue is their top headline. Okay, so that's certainly the most almost comically positive spin you could put on that meeting, which followed him spending a week antagonizing our allies in NATO. And then next headline cites Trump derangement syndrome. Because people were outraged that he sided with Putin's take over the fully evidence-based case by our national intelligence agencies. But those are two separate headlines. And then President Thanks is their third headline because the president thanked him. So, like, that's how hard they're having to focus on, like, the one glimmer of a actual person in a position of power saying what happened yesterday wasn't a complete fucking disaster for them.
Right. And even Fox and Friends, even this morning, they were still having trouble trying to wrap their heads around
Steve Doocy was having trouble?
Oh, I mean, Kilmeade was like, it's not good. They just couldn't figure it out.
Right.
Because they don't know what to do now.
And Tucker Carlson last night.
I think he blamed Mexicans.
He blamed
Mexicans.
He said,
certainly it's Mexico.
I was waiting. I was like, what is he going to possibly come up with to respond to this press conference? And it was that, yeah, sure, maybe Russia manipulated our election, but the Mexicans are also manipulating our election by, and I quote, packing the electorate, which just means, you know, immigrating to our country, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure Mexicans do not make up the largest group immigrating to the United States anymore. So
Right. That's
what's going on. This isn't the Zimmerman Telegram part two.
Right. Yeah, I know what that means. And
well, that was in,
I'm glad you said that out loud because the
Germans were like trying to get a military alliance with Mexico if the U.S. entered World War One against Germany. They're like, you should attack from down there. Anyway, that's. History.
So the GOP, I mean, this kind of fucked up their whole plan, right? Because they were planning on trying to impeach Rod Rosenstein, right?
Yeah. On Friday, after Peter Strzok testified and basically handed out L's like it was Halloween.
Right.
Then we heard like Trey Gowdy and the rest of, like, I think Mark Meadows and probably Jim Jordan. They were considering really pressing forward on impeaching Rod Rosenstein because they had to spin this in some way and point the finger at anyone but themselves. Right. Or this, now this thing has completely fallen apart about, like, you know, whether or not the intelligence community was against Trump. I mean, we're seeing now it's very clear what was going on. So now I think they're sort of, I don't know if it's a last ditch effort, because they'll probably find another way to act out of desperation, is to now impeach Rod Rosenstein and get him out of the DOJ, and then probably put someone else in, and then probably try and stifle the Mueller investigation that way. But it's at this point, it's not, the optics are not good for something like
but
that.
But he came out today and said, now, you know, he believes it.
Yeah, right.
So
I accept
how are
it.
They so, going to? Yeah, how are they going to pull
say,
that
we're,
off?
We're cool.
Right.
He believes it now. We're going to be fine. Get rid of Rosenstein.
This is like the trouble with having a reactionary, like, person who's just, you know, distracted by whatever the nearest shiny object is as your leader, is you just can't really get your grounding.
Right. And I mean, now we have the story of Maria Butina coming out, who is a literal Russian fucking spy colluding with Americans.
Yes.
And now, a lot of the documents keep it very vague. It says she was talking to American One or American Number Two or whatever. But a lot of people have began to maybe surmise who these people are. But anyway, you know, Maria Butina was charged as basically acting as an agent for the Russian Federation. And, you know, based on communications they intercepted, she was working with Alexander Torshin to, quote, they took steps, quote, to develop relationships with American politicians in order to establish private, or as she called them, back channel lines of communication, an FBI affidavit filed in court says. And, quote, these lines could be used by the Russian Federation to penetrate the U.S. national decision-making apparatus to advance the agenda of the Russian Federation. So, you know, she was doing stuff like cozying up to the NRA. She was like a Russian gun rights advocate, which I'm not sure what that means. I'm not sure there's a huge gun rights issue in Russia, but hey, whatever. And she cozied up to the NRA because they identified the NRA as being one of the biggest donors to Congress and having a lot of influence over the GOP. They're like, yo, maybe that's a good inroad.
Well, yeah, and if you want to look at why they go to the NRA, just look at that Sacha Baron Cohen documentary, because, I mean, why would these people be willing to read just whatever you put in front of them? Because they don't think about this shit. They're just like, whoever is giving me money, whoever is giving me exposure, I'm going to do whatever they say.
Right.
And so, yeah, she's going to go through the NRA.
Yeah. So in the documents, it alleged that there was an American that assisted her, a U.S. political operative who helped introduce her to, you know, influential people. That person hasn't been named or charged, but the description people are saying is of this man named Paul Erickson, who's a GOP consultant who was trying to organize a meeting between Trump when he was a candidate and Alexander Torshin, who was Butina's, like, sort of colleague and I think handler, basically.
So do we know that guy, though? Like, have we seen him around, or is he going to be like one of these faces that, like, well, who the hell's that guy?
I'm sure if you look at photos, he'll probably pop in. Yeah, and I think.
But was he in the news before this, Torshin?
Yeah, Alexander Torshin is.
Well, not Torshin.
Paul Erickson.
Yeah, Erickson.
No,
Torshin we know, right? Because
maybe in like more detailed accounts of things, but this is more like this is him sort of really popping up, at least for me.
Yeah.
So Alexander Torshin is former member of the Russian Parliament, and was all like, yeah, he has a lot of connections to the NRA. It's like that's his, I think, his biggest connection is like him being the connective tissue between the NRA and Russia.
Got it.
Yeah.
Breitbart and Drudge are both down right now with 502 errors.
What does that mean, do you think?
I have really? No idea. Yeah. ESPN is not down. Breitbart and
What's
Drudge.
Their take on this? What's Trey Wingo have to say?
Yeah, what is Trey Wingo's take on this? But yeah, the thing about this that's going to be a little bit spicier than most, you know, because obviously there are like 23 or 6 Russians that are indicted in general. She's the only one who's been arrested in country.
She's, here.
She's
yeah.
arrested. So that means she's going to have to go to trial and more tea will have to be spilled during the course of this trial.
By the way, Trump says he misspoke and meant to say, I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be Russia behind the election.
Oh, get the fuck out of here.
Fuck you. Fuck you. No, he didn't. Really?
That is breaking Dude, news this, on the top of CNN.
That shouldn't. Literally breaking news is nuh-uh.
Right.
What? Right. I told you. See, remember when I said eventually the rhetoric is going to get to the point where people are going to be saying nuh-uh. And, dude, I meant to say.
That's amazing. But
I did not mean to.
So this makes me wonder. So is everybody rushing to Drudge and Breitbart because they're like, well, what the fuck are they going to say now? Or did Drudge and Breitbart just take down their sites because they're just like, okay, we need to like. Do damage control and figure out like a take on this.
I also believe that they just have terrible IT people. And
oh, they definitely do.
They're susceptible to 5%.
Yeah. But anyway, CNN, not down. ESPN, not down. They have a hot take. Trey Wingo says collusion. And
collusion ain't no illusion.
Uh-huh. Collusion, then the other side of the pillow. Breitbart and Drudge are both down. So who the fuck knows why that's happening. All right, guys. We could talk a little bit about why the P-tape is not as far-fetched as we thought, but I think that's pretty evident to everybody.
I think a few points to point out,
okay,
right?
let's talk about
is
those
that,
points.
Vladimir Putin, that was how he came to power, right? Remember, he found a P-tape. There was a prosecutor that was investigating Boris Yeltsin.
Right.
And then was blackmailed into resigning with a video of him, in bed with prostitutes.
Yes.
And then it's rumored that Vladimir Putin is the guy who delivered the tape to the TV station.
Yes.
And then after that, that's when Boris Yeltsin's like, you are now the prime minister and eventually will be the heir apparent, basically.
Right. So to get Yeltsin to name him his successor— He saved Yeltsin by blackmailing, by getting compromise on this prosecutor.
Yeah.
Right.
And so they've been doing this for a while,
yes.
even since before World War II.
Yeah.
And they knew that like if we didn't have compromise, then we would generate it. And they put people in weird situations to be observed, to have pictures taken of them with in bed with women seems to be like their go-to move.
Yes, prostitutes.
Yeah. And or sex workers.
Or
Jack.
Sex workers,
sex
sorry.
Sex workers, Jack. And yeah, and you know, this is just sort of how this kind of works. And yeah, again, now that we look at sort of the clear odd power dynamic between Trump and Putin, that I think we can believe that. But my one thing about the P-tape is I don't even think even if it does come out, it will do shit. Because it's sort of like Dr. Dre's Detox album.
Right.
We've been hearing about this motherfucking album for, 20 years?
Right.
Okay? Shit, this is from Detox. This is new shit. And we're like, yo, where's it at? Where's it at? A lot of hip-hop fans were waiting for this album. If Detox ever comes out, people are going to be like, nah, all right, whatever. I've been preparing for it for 20 years.
He released an album that was, really well-produced and shit. The Compton album. And people were just like, nah. It's not Detox.
Yeah, exactly. And with the P-tape, we've already been sort of inoculated. We're like, oh, man, the P-tape, is that a P-tape?
Right.
And people have already began the speculating that I feel like if it does come out, people already sort of have braced themselves for the existence of this thing versus if we didn't know about the P-tape and just imagine if we didn't know anything about the P-tape and then the P-tape
dropped. Yeah.
That's going to have more of a jarring effect. But I don't know.
I think it'll still be a big deal.
Will it be the big deal?
But right. he was just up there with Putin being like, yeah, hey, whatever my boss says.
But didn't
I'm
you
cool with
hear what I said? He said he meant said, to say the other
oh.
of that.
Oh,
said,
they were cool.
He said it on opposite day.
I see.
And then do you think that's what now the GOP are like, oh, thank God, now we can just say
yeah,
it.
Now we can move on.
No, he meant to say that. He misspoke.
And they're all gonna repeat that. Well, you heard the president today, like Sarah Sanders is going to say that.
Right.
I think it was very clear our president said that he misspoke, and then they're all going to, okay, I'll report
and
that then.
Yeah, then they'll fall back to the talking point.
Yeah.
He's been the toughest on Russia than anybody before.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right, guys, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. And Miles, the World Cup is over.
Yes, yes. There it is. Whoa.
World Cup day.
Guys, please take this in one last time.
Woo!
Feeling like I'm in a Euro discotheque or whatever the kids call it. Mm-hmm.
No,
yes.
That's what they call it.
The World Cup is over. And, you know, France added another star to their crest. And, you know, before we get into that, I we don't have to get into that. It was a great game. It was a thrilling match. But one thing that I just do want to come out and point out is that there's a group of UK economists who have now sort of quantified the effect of sports on our happiness. So the University of Sussex economists Peter Dalton and George McCarron, they calculated that the happiness that fans feel when their team wins is outweighed by a factor of two by the sadness that strikes when their team loses. And then this article goes on to say, which means, assuming roughly an equal number of fans on both sides, the World Cup final made the world less happy than it was the day before.
Yeah.
I guess if we're just going off, because the intensity is very intense, if anyone who watches sports. So to prove this, the researchers analyzed data from an app that pinged like 32,000 people several times a day, like to ask them how happy they felt and where they were and what they were doing and who they were with. And then they could also figure out if they were a stadium. And they also coupled this with like years worth of data on football, soccer matches in the UK. And they found, like, when you look at these graphs, it's very clear that people, when they're winning, they're buzzing. Like, not like ecstatic, like, you know, like from like pure, you know, physical intimacy, but right. It's around the level of like watching a good movie or listening to a good album. Like, yeah. It boosted their mood. Whereas other people were very down in the dumps. And for a long time, even after the match, they even go on to show that even, well, like when you're at the stadium, it's even more intense. Like the euphoria is even more intense and the fucking sadness is even more intense when you're there witnessing it in person. And it sort of asks people like, why do we keep doing this to ourselves? And it's just because we have a bad time of gauging reality and adjusting for that. And we just sort of stay optimistic with sports to be like, maybe this will be the time that delivers it. Because a few people who were doing the study, they're like, a guy was a Newcastle United fan, and he was like, I've felt sadness probably more than most sports fans.
Right.
Because we've had some epic failures. We've been relegated. We've been promoted. We've had ups and downs. But it's just still this loyalty thing of being like, maybe this will be our day.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of what sports gives
us. Simplifying, right? I mean, it's boredom is like an existentially very difficult thing to experience, because then you get around to thinking about existential issues and like
right.
the fact that you're going to die eventually, and sports and like losing or winning, it simplifies things. It gives you something to focus on. I think it's the same thing as like scary movies. A lot of people pay a lot of money to go see scary movies and have themselves made to feel worse, but it gives you something else to focus on. It's like a very intense distraction.
You know, I'll say that about when you said like leaving the stadium depressed. In 1993, I was at a Chicago White Sox game against the Blue Jays where they lost in the playoffs. And that was the one that then the Blue Jays
went on to
the World Series.
Yeah.
And I just remember when they were losing. But then when that final out came and it was over, like, I don't know if I've been depressed, but that was like just 40,000 people walking to their cars just like, okay.
Yeah, melted.
Like, well, we were close, but that was all right.
And I mean, then,
But then also then to flip it around, I was at when the White Sox won the playoffs against the Angels to go into the World Series, the complete opposite. Even though I'm an Angel, it happened at Angel Stadium, the Big A, all the Sox fans were just elated. And then we had to watch all the sad Angels fans leave. So it was kind of a weird. You don't want to get in a fist fight with anybody.
Especially like when you watch that documentary about Steve Bartman. When he fucked that up for the Cubs the fucking
he didn't
rage.
Fuck it up for the Cubs.
I mean, not that he did, but you know, like that people chose
to scapegoat
him.
I know they did.
And how he became, even in the stadium, how you could just see that anger just go like focus on him.
Yeah.
Is you're like, oh shit. Like this really is a very pronounced sensation for sports fans. And yeah, it's a shame because when you looked, you thought this guy was, I don't even know what to compare it to.
Well, do you remember that just the image of him sitting there right after it happened and he's just kind of looking down? It's like, oh, this guy's life is ruined.
Yeah.
And everybody's ignoring the fact that the next play, the shortstop, I think it was Gonzalez. Is that right? Who cares? He was the guy that, had the error that really cost the game.
Right.
But everybody was so focused on that poor guy.
Yeah.
And I mean, when you talk to former athletes, they all say the losses are what stick with you, not the wins. The wins are like great, but the losses. And like, even look at Michael Jordan. Like, Michael Jordan, at the end of his career, when he's being inducted into the Hall of Fame, he's still, like, pissed off and has a chip on his shoulder. He had the best career in the history of sports. He, like, went out on top, and he still managed to be like, this guy never said I could do it. Look at him.
Right.
What a fucking jerk. I'm the best.
But you can even equate that to stand-up. Like, you know, when you have a bad show, nobody talks about a good show. Nobody goes, hey, did you see Pardo? He destroyed.
Fucking killed
it. But it's like, hey, did you see Pardo? Jesus Christ. Like, that's the one that everybody talks about. So we also dwell on the negative.
In this article, they also point to another study that American economists did of results from six NFL teams that showed a correlation between, like, worse than expected losses and incidents of domestic violence in the area.
Oh my gosh.
This is a very, it's crazy how much the sports can really affect people in both directions.
I remember growing up, my stepbrother was a big Chicago Bears fan, and if they lost on that Sunday, he was a mess the entire week.
Yeah.
Like, he would, and I was like, who gives a shit? It's a game.
Right, yeah.
And then, you know, but it would ruin, like, by Thursday, he might be coming out of it because he was getting excited for the next game.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And there are these studies that they've done on how sports victories and losses affect elections, like how people vote in local elections. And basically people will be like 3 to 5% more likely to vote for an incumbent if their local team wins.
Right.
Because your local team winning just dumps a bunch of dopamine into your brain. And, you know, you have a city full of people who are just slightly happier with, like, how their life is going. And so they're like, oh, well, yeah, we'll stick with this guy. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I don't think it's an insignificant thing because, yeah, it might only make people like 10 to 15% more happy, but it makes an entire city full of people that much happier or, you know, 30 to 40% more depressed. And who knows what that causes.
Yeah.
Well, Jimmy, it has been a pleasure having you here on the Daily Zeitgeist.
You're very nice. I hope I didn't muck it up.
No.
My thought is I mucked it up.
No, Jimmy.
You nailed it,
man. You didn't fart it up.
Don't you dare. Really? You want me to leave on that? You want me to leave with that in my head?
Where can people listen to you, find you, follow you?
Well, at Jimmy Pardo on Twitter, of course, and then they could listen to the award-winning podcast Never Not Funny at nevernotfunny.com or, you know, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah.
People seem to enjoy it.
Do you have a tweet that you've enjoyed or been enjoying?
You know, I when I was asked to do that, I went back to see what was the most recent one that I retweeted, and it was from Josh Comers, who was a writer on Conan years ago, and then he worked for Jimmy Fallon. He just wrote on the Bruce Willis roast. This is from 6-1, so I had to go back to June 1st for a tweet that I liked. Other than, like, you know, Rob Reiner or Stephen King, you know, taking our president down.
Right.
So this was the Atari, where he quoted the tweet. Atari co-founder Ted Dabney passes away at age 80. Josh Comer's joke was, try blowing on him. And that, to me, is just a perfect joke.
Yeah.
That's Josh Comer's. Follow him.
Yeah. That's amazing. Miles, how about you, man?
Well, my tweet, I think everybody was loving this Mike Scully tweet from yesterday. It was a quote tweet where he said, I asked Japan if they attacked Pearl Harbor. They said no. What else can I do? President Franklin T. Roosevelt.
That's great.
Anyway, so where can you find me? I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. So check me out there.
Cool. You can find me at Jack_O'Brien. And a tweet I've been enjoying is from at Ron Funches. Ordering a cheesesteak in Philadelphia is the most intimidating experience I've ever been through, and I'm the single father of a special needs child. So, yeah, do not fuck around when you're doing that. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. Where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we write out on Miles.
We're going to go out on a song by Abra. I've played some Abra before, but this song is called Roses. It has a nice sort of throwback late 80s, early 90s, 808 vibe to it. Cool. So just check that out. This is Roses by Abra.
All right. We're going to ride out on that. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you guys then.
Bye.